21. Set up to fail. I am no storyteller, to entertain you with whimsical yarns. From Oathbringer, Preface. A clamorous, insistent knocking woke Shallan. She still didn't have a bed, so she slept in a heap of red hair and twisted blankets. She pulled one of these over her head, but the knocking persisted, followed by Adolin's annoyingly charming voice. Shallan? Look, this time I'm going to wait to come in until you're really sure I should. She peeked out at the sunlight, which poured through her balcony window like spilled paint. Morning? The sun was in the wrong place. Wait. Stormfather. She'd spent the night out as Vale, then slept to the afternoon. She groaned, tossing off sweaty blankets, and lay there in just her shift, head pounding. There was an empty jug of Horneater White in the corner. Shallan, Adolin said, are you decent?
Depends, she said, voice croaking. On the context. I'm decent at sleeping.
She put hands over her eyes, safe hand still wrapped in an improvised bandage. What had gotten into her? Tossing around the symbol of the ghost bloods? Drinking herself silly? Stabbing a man in front of a gang of armed thugs? Her actions felt like they'd taken place in a dream. Shallan, Adolin said, sounding concerned. I'm going to peek in. Polona says you've been in here all day. She yelped, sitting up and grabbing the bedding. When he looked, he found her bundled there, a frizzy-haired head protruding from blankets, which she had pulled tight up to her chin. He looked perfect, of course. Adolin could look perfect after a storm, 6 hours of fighting, and a bath in creme water. Annoying man. How did he make his hair so adorable? Messy in just the right way. Polona said you weren't feeling well, Adolin said, pushing aside the cloth door and leaning in the doorway.
Blarg.
Is it, girl stuff?
Girl stuff, she said flatly.
You know, when you,
I'm aware of the biology, Adolin, thank you. Why is it that every time a woman is feeling a little odd, men are so quick to blame her cycle? As if she's suddenly unable to control herself because she has some pains. Nobody thinks that for men. Oh, stay away from Venar today. He sparred too much yesterday, so his muscles are sore, and he's likely to rip your head off.
So it's our fault?
Yes, like everything else. War, famine, bad hair.
Wait, bad hair? Shallan blew a lock of it out of her eyes.
Loud, stubborn, oblivious to our attempts to fix it. The Almighty gave us messy hair to prepare us for living with men.
Adolin brought in a small pot of warm wash water for her face and hands. Bless him. And Polona, who had probably sent it with him. Damnation, her hand ached. And her head. She remembered occasionally burning off the alcohol last night, but hadn't ever held enough stormlight to completely fix the hand, and never enough to make her completely sober. Adolin set the water down, perky as a sunrise, grinning.
So what is wrong?
She pulled the blanket up over her head and pulled it tight, like the hood of a cloak.
Girl stuff, she lied.
See, I don't think men would blame your cycle nearly as much if you all didn't do the same. I've courted my share of women, and I once kept track. Dee-Lee was once sick for womanly reasons 4 times in the same month.
We're very mysterious creatures.
I'll say.
He lifted up the jug and gave it a sniff.
Is this Horneater White?
He looked to her, seeming shocked, but perhaps also a little impressed.
Got a little carried away, Shallan grumbled. Doing investigations about your murderer.
In a place serving Horneater moonshine?
Back alley of the breakaway, Nasty place. Good booze, though.
Shallan, he said. You went alone? That's not safe.
Adolin, dear, she said, finally pulling the blanket back down to her shoulders. I could literally survive being stabbed with a sword through the chest. I think I'll be fine with some ruffians in the market.
Oh, right. It's kind of easy to forget. He frowned. So, wait. You could survive all kinds of nasty murder, but you still
get menstrual cramps?
Shallan said.
Yeah. Mother cultivation can be hateful. I'm an all-powerful shard-blade-wielding pseudo-immortal, but nature still sends a friendly reminder every now and then to tell me I should be getting around to having children.
No mating.
Pattern buzzed softly on the wall. But I shouldn't be blaming yesterday on that, Shallan added to Adolin. My time isn't for another few weeks. Yesterday was more about psychology than it was about biology. Adolin set the jug down.
Yeah, well, you might want to watch out for the horn-eater wines.
It's not so bad, Shallan said with a sigh. I can burn away the intoxication with a little stormlight. Speaking of which, you don't have any spheres with you, do you? I seem to have, eaten all of mine.
He chuckled. I have one, a single sphere. Father lent it to me so I could stop carrying a lantern everywhere in these halls.
She tried to bat her eyelashes at him. She wasn't exactly sure how one did that or why, but it seemed to work. At the very least, he rolled his eyes and handed over a single ruby mark. She sucked in the light, hungrily. She held her breath so it wouldn't puff out when she breathed and suppressed the light. She could do that, she'd found, to prevent herself from glowing or drawing attention. She'd done that as a child, hadn't she? Her hand slowly re-knit, and she let out a relieved sigh as the headache vanished as well. Adolin was left with a dun sphere.
You know, when my father explained that good relationships required investment, I don't think this is what he meant.
Shallan said, closing her eyes and smiling.
Also, Adolin added, we have the strangest conversations.
It feels natural to have them with you, though.
I think that's the oddest part.
Well, you'll want to start being more careful with your stormlight. Father mentioned he was trying to get you more infused spheres for practice, but there just aren't any.
What about Hatham's people? She said. They left out lots of spheres in the last high storm.
That had only been...
She did the math and found herself stunned. It had been weeks since the unexpected high storm where she'd first worked the Oath Gate. She looked at the sphere between Adolin's fingers.
Those should all have gone done by now, she thought.
Even the ones renewed most recently. How did they have any stormlight at all? Suddenly her actions the night before seemed even more irresponsible. When Dalinar had commanded her to practice with her powers, he probably hadn't meant practicing how to avoid getting too drunk. She sighed and, still keeping the blanket on, reached for the bowl of washing water. She had a lady's maid named Mari, but she kept sending her away. She didn't want the woman discovering that she was sneaking out or changing faces. If she kept on like that, Polona would probably assign the woman to other work. The water didn't seem to have any scents or soaps applied to it, so Shallan raised the small basin and then took a long, slurping drink.
I washed my feet in that, Adolin noted.
No, you didn't. Shallan smacked her lips. Anyway, thanks for dragging me out of bed.
Well, he said, I have selfish reasons. I'm kind of hoping for some moral support.
Don't hit the message too hard. If you want someone to believe what you're telling them, come to your point gradually so they're with you the entire time. He cocked his head.
Oh, not that kind of moral. Shallan said.
Talking to you can be weird sometimes.
Sorry, I'll be good.
She sat as primly and attentively as she could, wrapped in a blanket with her hair sticking out like the snarls of a thorn bush. Adolin took a deep breath. My father finally persuaded ELA Sadius to speak with me. Father hopes she'll have some clues about her husband's death.
You sound less optimistic.
I don't like her, Shallan. She's strange. Shallan opened her mouth, but he cut her off. Not strange like you, he said. Strange. Bad strange. She's always weighing everything and everyone she meets. She's never treated me as anything other than a child. Will you go with me?
Sure. How much time do I have?
How much do you need? Shallan looked down at herself, huddled in her blankets, frizzy hair tickling her chin.
A lot.
Then we'll be late, Adolin said, standing up. It's not like her opinion of me could get any worse. Meet me at Sabariel's sitting room. Father wants me to take some reports from him on commerce.
Tell him the booze in the market is good.
Sure. Adolin glanced again at the empty jug of Horneater White, then shook his head and left. An hour later, Shallan presented herself, bathed, makeup done, hair somewhat under control, to Sabariel's sitting room. The chamber was larger than her room, but notably the doorway out onto the balcony was enormous, taking up half the wall. Everyone was out on the wide balcony, which overlooked the field below. Adolin stood by the railing, lost to some contemplation. Behind him, Sabariel and Polona lay on cots, their backs exposed to the sun, getting massages. A flight of Horneater servants massaged, tended coal braziers, or stood dutifully with warmed wine and other conveniences. The air, particularly in the sun, wasn't as chilly as it had been most other days. It was almost pleasant. Shallan found herself caught between embarrassment. This plump, bearded man wearing only a towel was the High Prince, and outrage. She'd just taken a cold bath, pouring ladles of water on her own head while shivering. She'd considered that a luxury, as she hadn't been required to fetch the water herself.
How is it, Shallan said, that I am still sleeping on the floor while you have cots right here?
Are you a High Prince? Sabariel mumbled, not even opening his eyes.
No, I'm a Knight Radiant, which I should think is higher.
I see, he said, then groaned in pleasure at the masseuse's touch. And so you can pay to have a cot carried in from the war camps, or do you still rely on the stipend I give you? A stipend, I'll add, that was supposed to pay for your help as a scribe for my accounts. Something I haven't seen in weeks.
She did save the world, Turi, Polona noted from Shallan's other side.
The middle-aged Tardassian woman also hadn't opened her eyes, and though she lay chest down, her safe hand was tucked only halfway under a towel.
See, I don't think she saved it so much as delayed its destruction. It's a mess out there, my dear.
Nearby, the head masseuse, a large Horneater woman with vibrant red hair and pale skin, ordered a round of heated stones for Sabariel. Most of the servants were probably her family. Horneaters did like to be in business together.
I will note, Sabariel said, that this desolation of yours is going to undermine years of my business planning.
You can't possibly blame me for that, Shallan said, folding her arms.
You did chase me out of the war camps, Sabariel said, even though they survived quite well. The remnants of those domes shielded them from the west. The big problem was the Parshmen, but those have all cleared out now, marching toward Alethkar. So I plan to go back and reclaim my land there before others seize it.
He opened his eyes and glanced at Shallan.
Your young prince didn't want to hear that. He worries I will stretch our forces too thin. But those war camps are going to be vital for trade. We can't leave them completely to Thanadol and Vama. Great. Another problem to think about. No wonder Adolin looked so distracted. He'd noted they'd be late to visiting ELA, but didn't seem particularly eager to be on the move.
You'll be a good Radiant, Sabariel told her, and get those other oath gates working. I've prepared quite the scheme for taxing passage through them.
Callous,
necessary. The only way to survive in these mountains will be to tax the oath gates, and Dalinar knows it. He put me in charge of commerce. Life doesn't stop for a war, child. Everyone will still need new shoes, baskets, clothing, wine.
And we need massages, Polona added. Lots of them, if we're going to have to live in this frozen wasteland.
You two are hopeless, Shallan snapped, walking across the sunlit balcony to Adolin.
Hey, ready?
Sure.
She and Adolin struck out through the hallways. Each of the 8 High Princedom's armies in residence at the tower had been granted a quarter of the 2nd or 3rd level, with a few barracks on the 1st level, leaving most of that level reserved for markets and storage. Of course, not even the 1st level had been completely explored. There were so many hallways and bizarre tangents, hidden sets of rooms tucked away behind everything else. Maybe eventually each High Prince would rule his quarter in earnest. For now, they occupied little pockets of civilization within the dark frontier that was Urethiru. Exploration on the upper levels had been completely halted, as they no longer had Stormlight to spare in working the lifts. They left Sabariel's quarter, passing soldiers and an intersection with painted arrows on the floor leading to various places, such as the nearest privy. The guard's checkpoint didn't look like a barricade, but Adolin had pointed out the boxes of rations, the bags of grain, set in a specific way before the soldiers. Anyone rushing this corridor from the outside would get tangled in all of that, plus face pikemen beyond. The soldiers nodded to Adolin but didn't salute him, though one did bark an order to 2 men playing cards in a nearby room. The fellows stood up, and Shallan was startled to recognize them. Gaz and Vatha.
"Thought we'd take your guards today," Adolin said.
"My guards?" "Right." Shallan had a group of soldiers made up of deserters and despicable murderers. She didn't mind that part, being a despicable murderer herself, but she also had no idea what to do with them. They saluted her lazily. Vatha, tall and scruffy. Gaz, short, with a single brown eye, the other socket covered by a patch. Adolin had obviously already briefed them, and Vatha sauntered out to guard them in the front, while Gaz lingered behind. Hoping they were far enough away not to hear, Shallan took Adolin by the arm.
"Do we need guards?"
she whispered.
"Of course we do."
"Why? You're a shard bearer. I'm a radiant. I think we'll be fine."
"Shallan, being guarded isn't always about safety. It's about prestige."
"I've got plenty. Prestige is practically leaking from my nose these days, Adolin."
"That's not what I meant."
Adolin leaned down, whispering.
"This is for them. You don't need guards, maybe, but you do need an honor guard. Men to be honored by their position. It's part of the rules we play by. You get to be someone important, and they get to share in it."
"By being useless?"
"By being part of what you're doing," Adolin said. "Storms, I forget how new you are to all this. What have you been doing with these men?"
"Letting them be, mostly."
"What of when you need them?"
"I don't know if I will."
"You will," Adolin said. "Shallan, you're their commander. Maybe not their military commander, as they're a civil guard, but it amounts to the same thing. Leave them idle, make them assume they're inconsequential, and you'll ruin them. Give them something important to do instead, work they'll be proud of, and they'll serve you with honor. A failed soldier is often one that has been failed."
She smiled.
"What?"
"You sound like your father," she said.
He paused,
then looked away. Nothing wrong with that.
I didn't say there was. I like it.
She held his arm.
I'll find something to do with my guards, Adolin. Something useful, I promise.
Gaz and Vatha didn't seem to think the duty was all that important, from the way they yawned and slouched as they walked, holding out oil lamps, spears at their shoulders. They passed a large group of women carrying water, and then some men carrying lumber to set up a new privy. Most made way for Vatha. Seeing a personal guard was a cue to step to the side. Of course, if Shallan had really wanted to exude importance, she'd have taken a palanquin. She didn't mind the vehicles. She'd used them extensively in Carbranth. Maybe it was the part of Vale inside of her, though, that made her resist Adolin whenever he suggested she order one. There was an independence to using her own feet. They reached the stairwell up, and at the top, Adolin dug in his pocket for a map. The painted arrows weren't all finished up here. Shallan tugged his arm and pointed the way down a tunnel.
"How can you know that so easily?" he said.
"Don't you see how wide those strata are?" she asked, pointing to the wall of the corridor. "It's this way."
He tucked away his map and gestured for Vatha to lead the way.
"Do you really think I'm like my father?" Adolin said softly as they walked.
There was a worried sense to his voice.
"You are," she said, pulling his arm tight. "You're just like him, Adolin. Moral, just, and capable."
He frowned.
"What?"
"Nothing."
"You're a terrible liar. You're worried you can't live up to his expectations, aren't you?"
"Maybe."
"Well, you have, Adolin. You have lived up to them in every way. I'm certain Dalinar Kholin couldn't hope for a better son, and..."
"Storms, that idea bothers you."
"What? No."
Shallan poked Adolin in the shoulder with her free hand.
"You're not telling me something."
"Maybe."
"Well, thank the Almighty for that."
"Not going to ask what it is?"
"Ash's eyes, no. I'd rather figure it out. A relationship needs some measure of mystery."
Adolin fell silent, which was all well and good, because they were approaching the Sadia section of Urethiru. Though Ielai had threatened to relocate back to the war camps, she'd made no such move, likely because there was no denying that this city was now the seat of Alethi politics and power. They reached the first guard post, and Shallan's two guards pulled up close to her and Adolin. They exchanged hostile glares with the soldiers in forest green and white uniforms as they were allowed past. Whatever Ielai Sadius thought, her men had obviously made up their minds.
It was strange how much difference a few steps could make. In here, they passed far fewer workers or merchants, and far more soldiers. Men with dark expressions, unbuttoned coats, and unshaved faces of all varieties. Even the scribes were different. More makeup, but sloppier clothing. It felt like they'd stepped from law into disorder. Loud voices echoed down hallways, laughing raucously. The stripes painted to guide the way were on the walls here, rather than the floor, and the paint had been allowed to drip, spoiling the strata. They'd been smeared in places by men who had walked by, their coats brushing the still wet paint. The soldiers they passed all sneered at Adolin.
"They feel like gangs," Shallan said softly, looking over her shoulder at one group.
"Don't mistake them," Adolin said. "They march in step, their boots are sturdy, and their weapons well maintained. Sadius trained good soldiers. It's just that where father used discipline, Sadius used competition. Besides, here, looking too clean will get you mocked. You can't be mistaken for a Kholin."
She'd hoped that maybe, now that the truth about the desolation had been revealed, Dalinar would have an easier time of uniting the High Princes. Well, that obviously wasn't going to happen,
while these men blamed Dalinar for Sadeus's death. They eventually reached the proper rooms and were ushered in to confront Sadeus's wife. ELA was a short woman with thick lips and green eyes. She sat in a throne at the center of the room. Standing beside her was Moraes, one of the leaders of the Ghost Bloods.